Mini episode 547 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
We have our guest on the phone lines with us. It is going to be a pleasure to bring on one of our favorite recurring guests over a period of time, good friend of the show. You can catch him middays in New York on the vaunted WFAN, the greatest sports talk station in the country, I think most would say, where he is, he co-hosts the show with another of our past guests on the show, Joe Bonino. And you can catch him these days increasingly across various CBS Sports properties, CBS Sports, of course, being the mothership for WFAN. I speak, of course, as I say, good friend of the show, someone we always enjoy talking to, Evan Roberts from WFAN in New York. Evan, how you doing in Indianapolis tonight, my man?
Oh, fantastic. I just landed. It was raining. It's god-awful. I actually left the beautiful New York City to come here. I don't know why.
Well, being on America's North Coast, we get a lot of the same weather blowing across. So, yeah, I could have told you that was going to be the case. WrestleMania 31, very interested to talk about this with you because in looking at a lot of the feedback online in the media over the last week, it seems as though the bar of expectations, in my estimation, has really kind of hypnotized people. That, you know, it looked like it was really going to suck going in, not just the main event, but a lot of other things with the build that they had, kind of a substandard build. I think a lot of people would agree for a lot of the matches. And because it doesn't suck, you're hearing a lot of people now, oh, on the short list of the best ever. I thought it was pretty good, but am I missing something here? Where did you come down on that?
Oh, no. You're 100% right. It was a good WrestleMania. Like, I found myself entertained. There were a few things that pissed me off, but overall, I thought it was a very good WrestleMania. It's not, you know, I mean, there's been 31 of these bad boys. I'm not saying, first of all, I thought one of the best ones was the year before, was WrestleMania 30.
Yes.
And so, which is odd, like, if we're coming off one of the great WrestleManias of all time, which 30 was, why would the bar be lowered where we walk away from a decent WrestleMania and say, this is one of the greats of all time? It's not one of the greats of all time. It's just, it's not, but it was good. I mean, I thought a lot of the matches were entertaining. I thought that they opened the show the way they should with an Intercontinental title match that kind of put prestige back to the title. And I think the main event had us guessing. And too many times, and here's the one thing I'll say from 31 to 30, and I love 30. I just said it was one of the greats of all times. We knew the outcome. You know, we knew,
yep.
But we enjoyed the outcome. We enjoyed watching Daniel Bryan get his. I'm sitting there watching the main event, and I honestly didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, there were a lot of different ways they could go. There were ways that would tick us off that they could have gone, and they didn't. And I think that is something we don't normally get in a WrestleMania. A lot of times we go into the main event, and we know the outcome. We may still enjoy it. Like, I enjoyed Batista beating Triple H back at 21, but, you know, it was predictable. We all knew that was going to happen, just like we knew last year that Daniel Bryan was going to win. So I did enjoy the fact that we did go into that main event not knowing what was going to happen, and we got a little bit of a swerve, which was kind of cool.
Well, it's funny because the masked man on Grantland likes to throw around the buzzword of the reality era. And I think to whatever extent, if you believe in that kind of thing, that helped add a little bit more excitement, I thought, to the main event because you start earlier in the week with the intrigue of Brock's contract. How is this going to resolve itself? How is this possibly going to impact the main event? The reception that Roman Reigns has been getting in a lot of places, as people rightfully have perceived that he was being shoved down our throat, how is that going to manifest itself? And then watching the match itself, it's funny because I had a friend who was back behind the curtain there that night, and I'm thinking to myself, he's probably watching Vince throwing monitors all around because the time was so compressed at the end there. I'm thinking to myself, Vince is probably screaming at people 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go. It seemed like it was really kind of bogged down time-wise, but in a way, that just made it all the more exciting. Were we going to see another what was it, the Halloween Havoc 98, where they go off the air in the middle of the main event. I mean, you know, in a way, didn't some of the train wreck things in the build and even the execution of the match just kind of make it better?
Well, you know what's funny? When The Rock took an hour and a half to do his little segment with Triple H and Ronda Rousey, and by the way, I mean, I'm watching this thing, and I love The Rock, but, I mean, can you move this thing along? I mean, can we get to the point a little bit quicker? But as I'm watching it, I said this to my friend, because I looked at the clock, and I knew, okay, we got two matches left. I said to him, do you think they're dragging this out because The Undertaker showed up and they realized the guy can't wrestle? Like, they looked at him and said, wait a second, we can't put you out there. Because remember, we haven't seen The Undertaker in a year. Who the hell knows? I think there was, like, a picture on the Internet not that long ago that made him look like this old, decrepit man. So I was thinking, well, what's going to happen? Are they like, axing the Undertaker match? Are they going to just try to move on very quickly? Then when they had it, you're thinking, all right, this is going to be a squash. It's going to go quickly because you're looking at the clock. So it was kind of interesting to see what would happen. And then I started thinking, even though it's still on pay-per-view, because it's on the network, does it matter what time it ends? Like, could they – I mean, for those ordering on pay-per-view, first of all, what's wrong with you? I mean, seriously, you're paying, you know, $60 for something you could have for $10 a month and then cancel if you really want it. So I thought for a second that maybe the fact it was going long wasn't going to matter because they were on the network. But you know what? To me, maybe you disagree. I didn't think the main event felt that rushed. I thought they gave it enough time, and it worked out. You know, I thought it was very entertaining.
Oh, I agree with you. But that's what gave it more of the train wreck sense, I thought, too. The fact that they didn't rush it. And you're looking at the clock, you know, 4 minutes at the top of the hour, 3 minutes, you know, and that, to me, that just kind of added to the general excitement. I agree. I thought the main event match was a great one, and I thought the outcome, they did a very good job of backing themselves out of the corner that they booked themselves into. And Vince McMahon, again, strikes me. He might be the last guy on the planet who is prone to bouts of introspection when things don't go well, but you got to wonder if he's been sitting there the last couple days and thinking, you know, that greed move of rushing Daniel Bryan back for the Royal Rumble. If he's ready to go, we'll put him out there now. We'll try and add some intrigue to the Royal Rumble when they never had any intention of having him go over. Then they put him in the main event in February and kind of stoke things a little bit more. Do you get the sense now Vince might be thinking, you know, maybe we should have brought back Daniel Bryan very close to WrestleMania and maybe we wouldn't have as much of the bad kind of heat on Roman Reigns right now?
I don't know if Vince McMahon actually, like, I don't know if he really cares what we think. And I really don't know if he would ever admit too many mistakes. And I don't think he likes Daniel Bryan. And I think that now he's got Daniel Bryan in a perfect position, right? He's got him in a position where a lot of Daniel Bryan fans are like, oh, it's cool. He's adding prestige to the Intercontinental title. I even said it before. But he's clearly out of the main event picture. Like, they put him in that little mid-card role, and I think that's where Vince McMahon wants him. So Vince may be sitting back smoking a cigar saying, I'm a genius. I've buried Daniel Bryan. Because in a way, he kind of has. Like, the people aren't going crazy about Daniel Bryan being a mid-card guy. You know, nobody's going nuts about it. And Vince has him exactly where he wants him. Like, obviously, to me, it would have made a lot more sense to give Daniel Bryan's return the proper build, not have his first match be on SmackDown against the jobber that is Kane, and not have him not only get eliminated from the Royal Rumble, but eliminated at the most random time. I mean, if you're going to eliminate him, at least get him to the final two. I think Vince probably looks back at it and says, this is exactly what I wanted. He didn't want Daniel Bryan to be the top guy, and now he's got him in that cute little Intercontinental title spot.
Oh, you're absolutely right if we're viewing this simply through the prism of spite. But in terms of business, you know, Vince wasn't forced to give us the full loaf like he did a year ago, giving Daniel Bryan the win. But as far as Roman Reigns not getting the win, I mean, the fans got at least half a loaf this year. It's Seth Rollins. Clearly, Vince is able to justify this in terms of, okay, we're building our next Triple H. We're building our next franchise heel for the next 10 to 15 years. He can justify it that way, but the investment in Brock Lesnar was all about building him up for Roman Reigns to be the guy to take him down in that moment. I mean, there's not any doubt in your mind, is there, that Vince backed down due to the circumstances that were created?
Well, I think it may be the case, but let me throw this at you. All right, so Brock Lesnar gets this victory over The Undertaker last year, and I remember talking to you about it. We're all stunned. We're all like, oh, my God, I can't believe they gave it to Lesnar. And then I started to see the genius in it, saying, okay, now they're going to put the belt on him. He's a special attraction. He's going to beat whoever he faces, even though I think he had, like, literally two title defenses after he won the title. But who cares? The guy is still champion for a long time. And I think, yeah, the plan was to put somebody over, and that guy was Roman Reigns. But let me ask you this. Maybe when they had this all scripted out, they didn't think Brock was going to resign. Maybe they had this scripted out as this is Brock. He's going to be done. They knew when his contract ran out. It's not like it was a surprise that it was going to run out right after WrestleMania. And, yeah, he'd put somebody over, and that would be it. Now they realize this Lesnar thing is kind of working. You know, people really like him. He's popular. We want to bring him back. You know, we want to make a push to re-sign the guy. And they do. Now they've re-signed the guy. Now think about it. You've got this monster, Brock Lesnar, that you've booked to beat The Undertaker, destroy John Cena, and be a champion for a year. But you don't necessarily want him to be a part-time champion anymore. Maybe the change of plans wasn't necessarily Roman Reigns isn't ready, but the change of plans was we want to keep Brock Lesnar strong. We want to keep him as the guy. We've got him signed for another few more years. We're going to use him sparingly, but we don't want him to lose clean because, yeah, I thought like you thought, sure, the plan was for Roman Reigns to do a few Superman punches, become the champion, and that's it, and Brock's gone. But now that Brock isn't gone, maybe the reason there was a change of plans was they don't want Brock Lesnar losing, and he didn't lose. You know, so now whenever he comes back, probably at SummerSlam, and probably as a face because everybody loves the guy, Brock Lesnar never lost the title. So you may be right, but maybe the reason this whole thing changed was because of Brock Lesnar being a part of this company moving forward.
That is a very, very compelling counter-narrative to what I said. Yeah, I guess either scenario could really be right in looking at it. And, yeah, if just about breaking Michael Cole's neck doesn't turn your face, then I suppose nothing would. But, you know, Brock certainly is an important part of things here. At this point in time, and that's a very interesting point because they have to worry about matches for him now for the next 3 years and keeping him strong in that regard. I thought, to be honest with you, there was a little bit of a missed opportunity at the Royal Rumble. They seem to be teasing going in a certain direction. I thought that if they wanted to do Brock versus Reigns at WrestleMania and have it get over a little bit better, maybe you have Reigns interfere in that match in the three-way. Seth pins Cena. They could have done the same thing at Royal Rumble and gotten the belt off of Brock without him getting pinned, and they chose not to take it at the time. So in retrospect, if they were going to be building up Seth Rollins, it was probably better to do it at WrestleMania. But it's interesting that they had the same scenario in front of them 2 months ago, and they flinched on it.
Well, the other thing is, and I think this would have really – and Seth Rollins is a tremendous heel, so I'm not taking anything away from him. But – remember the reaction when Seth Rollins came out. The reaction was excitement. The reaction was cheering. When he won the title, people were excited, and they were mostly excited because Roman Reigns wasn't winning the title, right? So if you made the main event what it should have been, which is Daniel Bryan against Brock Lesnar, and you have the exact same thing happen, everything's the same. You know, Daniel Bryan is about to pull off the miracle of all miracles and beat Brock Lesnar, and Seth Rollins' music comes out, how do you think the people react? How do you think the people react when Seth Rollins wins the title and it hurts Daniel Bryan's chances of winning the title, not Roman Reigns? I know Rollins is a heel. That's their plan. Don't you think he would go over more as a heel if he took it away from the guy everybody likes instead of taking it away from the guy people can't stand? So that's the other thing to look at. It's saying if they had this plan all along for Seth Rollins, it would have made a hell of a lot more sense to put Daniel Bryan in the main event, because it would have made Rollins even more of a heel than he is right now.
Absolutely. Although Dave Meltzer always likes to talk about the differential there with heat on the wrestler, heat on the promotion. The way that it ended, it does seem like there's the heat on Seth Rollins, and it's the good kind of heat, and where I think people aren't hating on the company the way that they would have if, ironically, the alleged babyface had gone over on Sunday night. Before and after Sunday, of course, that's always the highlight of what we would call WrestleMania week, but there's always other notable things happening as well. The first ever NXT show is a part of WrestleMania week. Friday night looks like that's going to become a regular staple, and of course, the longtime staple of WrestleMania week, being the Hall of Fame ceremony on Saturday night. Was there anything that really kind of jumped to your mind, really significant from either of those two events?
Well, what's significant is the fact that Rikishi is not a Hall of Famer. And no offense to him. I mean, showing your ass and putting it in a thong does not make one a Hall of Famer. I'll give the Bushwhackers their due. Even though, like, when I watched them as a kid, they were more of a joke. They had a long career outside of the WWE, and I respect that. So I'm not even going to get on them. But freaking Rikishi, I mean, you got to be kidding me. I think that one I took away. And from the actual card itself, I'm still pissed that Sting didn't win. And I know that maybe looking back on it, I shouldn't have been as naive as maybe a lot of us were to think Sting would win, that Vince would actually put over a WCW guy. I thought that match was entertaining with the NWO and DX. But are you kidding me? Sting has his one match in the WWE, and it may be his only, and you have him lose? I mean, that was the one thing that really annoyed me coming out of WrestleMania.
I don't blame you. Well, how ironic that Hulk Hogan was a part of things with the Starrcade 97 booking that they were using in that match there. And the NWO siding with Sting, I mean, I've had a hard time getting my friends to go along with me on this particular point, but I mean, at what point does the ahistorical booking of this start to come into play? The NWO black and white, no less. I've seen the counter argument of, well, Sting was in the Wolfpack, yeah, with Nash only, not with Hall and with Hogan. So you can't justify that on any level. It was just weird. But again, though, it seemed like the casuals just marked out for it. OMG, NWO versus DX. So I realized that's who they were aiming it at.
But that was it. Like, you're right. I mean, the first thing I thought about when the NWO came out was, what were you doing? I mean, the rivals, the NWO is helping Sting. What the hell is going on here? But it was all about DX versus the NWO. And I know that's unrelated to Sting, really. It really is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's what they were going for. What I thought would have really helped is, and this would have included Sting winning, is the last guy to come out should have been the Nature Boy, should have been Ric Flair. Now, Ric Flair was rivals with Sting, but as we saw a few weeks earlier, Ric Flair's got respect for Sting. I would have been able to, like, kind of, and Ric Flair also is WCW. The three guys that came out in the NWO are WWE guys to begin with, and Hall Nash,
yep,
and especially freaking Hulk Hogan. I mean, come on.
Right.
So if you would have sent Flair out there, you know, I would have, and by the way, hurt Triple H, which is another interesting angle that who knows what they could do with moving forward, and help Sting win. So then, you know, if you're Vince, well, Triple H didn't lose clean. You know, you could go with that to make you feel better at night. I thought that would have been the best ending to it. But, I mean, look, you're right. Obviously, the NWO and Sting were never on the same side. But I think it was all just to have that, you know, kind of classic feel, like, oh, here it is, finally, NWO versus DX, that whole thing.
Exactly. You know, and creating the WrestleMania moment, which it seems like they're trying so hard to do and so hard to reach for time and time again. And it's more interesting as we go along year after year that the things that once kind of crept up on us of a WrestleMania moment or anything like that have now come to be expected, as has been the case with, and I've joked about this in the past, that WrestleMania is the go-home show for the most anticipated show of the year, the post-WrestleMania Raw. And now with what the crowds are going to do, that has almost sort of become a cliche, right? We're at least 4 years into this because they took over the Raw in Miami the night after Daniel Bryan got screwed at WrestleMania 29 and or 28 rather. So we've had this happen a couple times. You always get the great new debuts. In this case, it was Neville who came out there, who I haven't seen as much of, but I couldn't have been more impressed for the couple of minutes that he was out there with Curtis Axel. And the crowd chants, some very raunchy ones, very, very off color at some of the divas. The crowd really sort of going too far in that regard. So for the annual spectacle that is the night after WrestleMania, what did you think of how it all played out? Of course, you had the big Brock Lesnar angle that dominated everything too.
Well, the first hour and a half, it was one of like the great Raws of all time. The last hour and a half sucked. I mean, you can't give me this predictable, boring, plotting six-man tag with, you know, Kane and the Big Show, who we've seen enough of. I mean, I agree with the chant of just retire. I mean, and I have great respect for those guys, but enough of Kane and the freaking Big Show. And, like, I'm watching the last hour and a half waiting for the big surprise. I didn't know what the big surprise would be. I don't know what I was expecting. But I was expecting something because the first hour and a half was amazing. It was electric. I mean, it was the Brock Lesnar show. Brock didn't have to open up his mouth, and he was the superstar. He was the megastar. And I don't know if they could have timed things differently. Maybe the – I don't know. I'm thinking out loud. Maybe you end the show with the Brock Lesnar-Seth Rollins quote-unquote match and Brock just beating the crap out of everybody, and maybe that's how the show goes off the air, because to do that at like 9:15, it just – it was like the end of the show. I mean, it was basically like, well, where are they going from here? And they had nothing. They had nothing. The chants were the most entertaining part. So I thought the first hour and a half was amazing, and the last hour and a half was brutal.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, the setup that you've got there, again, with Kane and the Big Show in the main event, that doesn't give you a lot of a good sense going forward because, again, everybody being prisoner of the moment about, oh, Sunday night, absolutely great show, maybe one of the great shows ever. Dave Meltzer, a past show guest who I respect thoroughly, said it was one of the best WrestleManias of all time. To me, total prisoner of the moment, but for all the people that were saying, oh, maybe things are going to get better now, and then the next night it's Kane and the Big Show, and I'm looking at it going, you know, you just brought back Sheamus, you got Wade Barrett, you got Cesaro and Kidd. If you wanted to keep doing an authority-type angle, how about like a modern-day corporation, updated version of Evolution, whatever. I mean, they've got the talent to put into that spot, and that's what's so frustrating is that they keep the old guys in there as the gatekeepers.
Yeah, I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe they just have these guys under contract. They've got nothing else to do with them. But I am curious where they go from here, because the one thing that we really don't know, I mean, we can guess, is who Seth Rollins is going to feud with. I mean, I guess the assumption is that it's Randy Orton, but what do you do with Roman Reigns? Like, what's his next feud? I mean, Ryback, they kind of tried to throw in the main event. What are they going to do with him? You know, and John Cena's next feud is what? It's not really going to be Dean Ambrose, is it? Is it going to be Rusev again? So, in a way, they never really, for the most part, started what the next chapter is going to be. I mean, the only thing I'm confident about is what you mentioned with Sheamus. You know, the Sheamus, Wade Barrett, Daniel Bryan, Dolph Ziggler thing. But then what is it? Is that a four-way match? Is it just Daniel Bryan against Wade Barrett, and then, you know, Sheamus against Ziggler. Like, what? I don't really know what they're planning there, but they never really clarified what the next step is, and they usually do. And that's why the Raw after just seemed like they wrote a script, and then they're like, oh, we have no idea how to finish it. Let's worry about it next week. Retired from WrestleMania.
That's a good point. I wonder the extent to which, because what you're talking about makes all the sense in the world as far as when they did the Brock angle, and it would have been better on the second half of the show, no question about that. I wonder if they've been keeping one eye peeled. And I will tell you, as somebody who has been greatly enjoying the first season of Better Call Saul, the fact that the numbers have been soft during WrestleMania season here, there's been a thought that there could be some real cause and effect. I think there's a tremendous crossover between Breaking Bad fans and pro wrestling fans, so you almost kind of wonder, because they've been trying to do some other things during WrestleMania season as well, get some things on before the 10 o'clock hour. I wonder if that's – and they actually did a very good number on Monday night, so I wonder if they kind of outsmarted themselves out of fear in some way, possibly, of another show stealing their thunder.
Didn't they try – I'm trying to remember the exact circumstance. It may have been like early in the football season where they had the main event at like 10 o'clock or something like that.
Half-time.
And then they ended the show – halftime. What was the main event and what did they end the show with? Because remember they ended the show with like something just completely like weird?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly. I think I remember Cena being a part of it, because I think Cena was out making a cheesy announcement early in the show. I'm going to face so-and-so at halftime, and I think he does a little wink about what that's supposed to be. Maybe it was him,
right?
And Seth Rollins. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, they've tried like these weird things like that. You know what? Just go with what works. The big main event is going to happen at like 11:05. We're going to be off the air at 11:10. Like that. Don't, and that's East Coast time. I'm not sure how that works with the Central and Mountain or delay, but don't screw around and try different things. You got to give us the payoff at the end. You got to end the show with us saying, holy crap, what's going to happen next week? You got to go with that typical route. I turned off Monday Night Raw saying, holy crap, why did I just waste the last hour and a half of my life? That was my reaction when Raw ended.
I don't blame you, because, yeah, it was pretty lackluster. From that point on, no question about it. And excellent points, as always. Evan Roberts, always a pleasure to have you on. I hope you enjoy this weekend greatly. I know that you will. The national semifinals, the championship game, so much going on in Indianapolis. Thank you so much for being back on with us, and look forward to catching up with you again.
Anytime, my friend. Good luck to those Cavs.
All right, this is the year. I really believe that, so I'm sure we'll be talking about that next time you're on as well. Thank you so much, Evan.
Yeah.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.